entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
It is indeed. Hi there. Welcome into the best of Downtown. On this Sunday morning, the 8th day of September, Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you, brought to you this morning and every weekday afternoon by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Some terrific recent conversations coming up for you this morning. We talk with Anson Williams of Happy Days, Mickey Dolenz of The Monkees, and the directors of a wonderful new documentary on Linda Ronstadt, all coming up between now and 10 o'clock this morning on Z62 Retro Radio. Let's get things underway by talking with a guy who has been pretty darn famous ever since he debuted as part of the cast of Happy Days back in 1974. He was with the show for a decade, but has gone on to a very successful career as a director and also as an entrepreneur. We had a chance to catch up recently with Patsy Weber himself, Anson Williams, here on Downtown. Anson, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We want to talk about a number of things with you, but starting with your latest entrepreneurial effort, a product designed to help people avoid drowsy driving, and I understand that it was a personal experience of yours that led to this.
It totally was. Actually, a couple of decades ago, I was directing a show, and it was a desert area outside of L.A., very hot day, exhausting day, and then driving back, it's like a black curtain came down. I fell asleep, just dozed off at the wheel, ended up 3 seconds later bouncing around in the desert, almost killed myself. Thank God no one else was around. Nothing happened, but my second cousin, who I've called uncle since I was born, it was Dr. Henry Heimlich, famous for the Heimlich maneuver. Mm. And Henry was really, really understands sensory connection of the body and all this pretty much old science. And he recommended that I cut up lemons and keep them with me on difficult days. And he explained that if I bit into it when I felt this exhaustion, the sour citrus and the citric acid would hit the lingual nerve on top of the tongue. And the automatic reflex reaction of the body is adrenaline. Boop, you're up, you're alert instantly, nothing in your system. Just like going to the doctor with they have the little rubber mallets and they check the reflexes. Same thing, except the reflex action is from the tongue to the brain and the automatic reaction is adrenaline. And I did that for years and it really stopped the problem. And then through the years, I not only was I in entertainment, I got very interested in creating products that were problem solvers in many areas of life. And I was looking into the catastrophic problem of drowsy driving, which is up there with guns. There's more death, more tragedy than drunk driving and medicated driving combined. 168 million plus drowsy drivers a year. 1 out of 5 falling asleep at the wheel. It's just a crazy, crazy problem. And I thought to myself, with all the crazy stuff going on in the world, this is something we can really solve. So I called Dr. Heimlich with this idea of creating an alert drop spray, where you just spray the right amount of citric acid, the right amount of sour lemon, right on top of your tongue. And I said, and it would be an instant wake up. It would be an instant clarity to not, run off the road or hit someone or whatever. And he agreed. He said, absolutely, it will save more lives in the Honda maneuver. And he helped me. We created Alert Drop, which is really just a powerhouse lemon in a spray. And a couple of sprays on the middle of the top of your tongue, and you're alert, you're ready to go, nothing in your system, and a life is saved.
And it's an all-natural product, right, with no caffeine?
No caffeine, no stimulants, no nothing. And we've already been honored by the U.S. Congress, by the California State Senate, City of L.A., fire departments, police departments. But more importantly, it's already helped so many people. Also, we found it's incredibly helpful to college students. The main problem in college is these kids go to the hospital because they take too much caffeine in their system, they take these energy drinks, and they're basically poisoning their system to stay up, and they're ending up in the hospital. So Alert Drops is wonderful, actually, for anything where you need to be alert, whether it's your job, whether, you know, anytime you need clarity, AlertDrops comes in handy. So, it became a very emotional endeavor for me. Not only, you know, first of all, exhaustion is a huge part of the problem in America right now. And we have a way of, like, you know, stopping tragedy because of it.
Do I remember right that you mentioned you were directing a show? I think if I remember right, I read it was one of my favorite shows, though it was only on for a season, Dabney Coleman and Slap Maxwell.
Yes, that's the show. I was directing Slap Maxwell, and I did six or seven of them. And it was a really, we were faking Texas in Palmdale, California, which is just outside of L.A. And it was just an exhausting, you know, hot day. And driving back home after the shoot, you know, I blacked out. I fell asleep. Yeah.
Well, people can get more information. You've got a website, alertdrops.com. Another one of your entrepreneurial efforts is also BOGO List. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, BOGO List, which is interesting. BOGO is buy one, get one. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a site where people can just go and find the best two-for-one deals, you know, everywhere in one place. And basically, it's literally a roadmap. You go there, and for that day, there's the best buy one, get one in every category of life. And it's a way to get more for your dollar and have a more productive life at a reasonable cost. So we created BOGO List so people can go there and just find their buy one, get ones for the day.
I know you've talked about how important Gary Marshall was to you in your career and in your life. What was it? Does it go back to Gary? Was it Gary who stimulated your interest in the business world and getting involved in that?
He was a huge inspiration for it. He saw I had it. He saw what I was about. And he said, you know, he told me, you're very entrepreneurial, especially since I convinced him to put music on the show. You know, that was my idea. So I could sing and get a record contract and actually do something outside the show. And he respected that. But he said, you know, you've got all these qualities, Anson. You should, you know, take it seriously. So, yeah, he was a big inspiration in terms of giving me the confidence to move forward with ideas and make
films here on Downtown with the characters that became beloved on Happy Days. People might forget that many of those characters originated on a different series, Love American Style.
That's right. Well, it didn't originate on Love American Style. They did a pilot called Love in the Happy Days. But it was called A TV Comes Into Town. Or I forgot exactly what the title was. But there was no Fonzie in it. There's no Ralphie in it. Mr. C was played by a different actor. A different actress played Joni. So, it was much more like a Summer of 42, a much softer pilot, and it didn't sell. So they aired it on Love American Style, you know, to get some of their money back for producing the pilot. And then a year later, American Graffiti came out, and there was a big hit on Broadway called Grease, and ABC thought, maybe we should rethink this 50-show kind of idea. But this time, Gary made it a much more... much more like American Graffiti, and thank goodness he created the Fonzie character, the Ralphie character. The actor playing Mr. Cunningham wasn't available, so Tom Bosley did it. So, and then Aaron Moran took over for Joni, and the chemistry is there for magic. So, yeah, it's very interesting how all that transpired.
I can't imagine what was it like for you guys, the younger members of the cast, when Happy Days became an instant phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, it actually wasn't instant. It started off popular. I think we were in the top 20. And we came in mid-season that year. And then the next year, we really went down. The second season, we went down to 48th place in the ratings. And that's when Gary Marshall and Jerry Paris, our director, decided to try changing the whole format into a three-camera live audience show, which changed the whole tone of the show. So they moved Henry forward, and they changed it to a live audience show, and that's when we became a phenomenon. That's when we became the number one show in the world.
And all these years later, Anson, the show endures. It remains popular. People have such great memories of it, continue to watch it in reruns. What is it about that show that's made it withstand the test of time?
Well, one, it was always old because it was always a different time. But there was, I think it's just great. First of all, great writing and funny and all that. But there's just something above the page with the chemistry of the cast. There's just some magic there that just connected with the world, all sorts of different cultures. And you can't predict it. You really can't create it. It just happens. So there is an it factor to the show that just is evergreen.
Well, you have an incredible resume as a director and some wonderful shows through the years. Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Seventh Heaven, The Secret Life of the American Teenager. Around here, we're quite partial to the Star Trek series that you directed. When did you first become interested in working behind the camera?
Early on during Happy Days. In fact, the first time a film I created was produced, was a movie of the week for NBC called Skyward, and it starred Bette Davis. And Ron Howard and I exec produced it. Ron directed it. And that was my sort of first creative producing situation. And then as time went on, I kind of wanted to get more involved in just as a director. So I had other shows in development, and no one would really give me a shot directing. So I was able to hire myself on a couple of shows that I created and sold, and developed went from acting to totally behind the camera in 1985.
Does your experience as an actor make you an actor's director, make you better able to understand the needs of your actors?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Because, you just know what you're going through, and you know the vulnerabilities and the pressures. And absolutely. And they actors understand that too. So they're kind of open for, to connect with you, because they know that I'm familiar with, what they're going through. And it also, I can also shorthand a lot of things, just having been there,
The landscape of television has changed so much now with cable and streaming services. And in many ways, there are more opportunities. It's not like in the days when you had to get picked up by a major network. Is it easier or harder to get work for actors and directors these days?
Oh, it's just different challenges. There's a lot of politics now in directing and producing. Well, you have to, it used to be who's the best. It's not who's the best anymore. It's what's politically correct, which kind of upsets me. I believe everyone should have equal opportunity, but the best should get the job, especially in the art world. It just makes it a little more challenging. The other thing is, too, there's a lot of wonderful shows out there, but then there's also a lot that just kind of clutters up the place. And money-wise and all that, it's gone down considerably. I would say it's a harder road these days.
If I look back at the shows that you've directed, they're all high-quality programs. So what do you look for when you choose that assignment? Because you've been associated with really nothing but really good programs through the years.
Well, I've been lucky. I've been lucky that I was able to, be able to learn my craft and be able to just be able to work with certain people that I was able to continue to work with for years. So it's just wonderful to be able to work with such wonderful collaborators and make friendships and we depend on each other. So
we talked with Henry Winkler a while back, and sometimes when you're on a big hit show, you want to move on and leave that in the past. But it seems like everybody involved with Happy Days embraces that role that gave such a jump start to their careers. What is it about that time together that's enabled all of you to still look at it as a special and meaningful time?
Well, it was just that, we were all young. It was just such a wonderfully creative time, and also just a wonderful emotional connection with it. Just an amazing cast. And Gary also put together a softball team. And we're all ex-athletes, so when we weren't doing the show, we'd be traveling all over the world doing charity softball games, against the Marines, and we'd go to Okinawa and go against the Marines, Army, Navy, Air Force. We would do charity games in every major state in the United States. I mean, you can't make up those kind of wonderful experiences to his teammates. And I was just, just moments that are outside of entertainment. And all that combined just made it, you know, a very special, ongoing sea of memory.
Who was the best softball player on the Happy Days team?
The best? Don Most. Donnie. I think he could have been an amazing athlete.
Wow. Well, Anson,
Ron was good too.
It's wonderful to talk with you. We've enjoyed your career for all these many years. We wish you much success with this important product, Alert Drops. Again, alertdrops.com for more information. Keep up the great work in all the many aspects of your career, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Anson Williams with us here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we come back, the directors of a terrific new documentary on Linda Ronstadt, Rob Epstein, and Jeffrey Friedman next on Z62 Retro Radio.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Summertime is best spent chillaxing, and chillaxing happens best with the flavors of summer at the Ground Round. Right now at the Ground Round in Bangor, savor the summer grilled chicken sandwich. It's a tender chicken breast topped with pepper jack cheese and a citrus garlic fruit salsa on a grilled split top bun served with the Ground Round's house-made pasta. Wash it down with a sangria and round out the meal with the perfect dessert, the strawberry float cake. Seriously, it's amazing. Take your summer chillax to the max with the Ground Round on Audlin Road in Bangor. GroundRound.com.
ClearPoint Capital is excited to be the official financial advisor sponsor of the Maine Black Bears. At ClearPoint Capital, our client relationships are built upon trust, proactive service, state-of-the-art planning tools, and a disciplined investment process. ClearPoint Capital is your financial advocate. Your success is our success. See what our team can do for you and your family. ClearPoint Capital and the Maine Black Bears. Now that's a winning combination.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. Call us today at 307-7718.
The Sea Dog Brewing Company in Bangor is all about new this summer. Don't worry, the Sea Dog still has the same menu, theme nights, and the charm they're known for. But there's a whole lot of new to get excited about. Like the new deck. It's bigger now with a bar facing the water, giving you a great view. This summer, the Sea Dog will also have new weekly food and drink specials. And if you love frozen ones, the Sea Dog has new ice machines to make the best frozen drinks in town. Perfect for those hot summer days. Going to a waterfront concert? Make the Sea Dog your go-to before and after. It's the closest bar to the venue, so it's an easy walk to and from. Plus, they give away a pair of concert tickets to a lucky winner about an hour before each show. And as always, the Sea Dog has theme nights throughout the week, like the Monday Night Social with Riff Johnson, Taco and Margarita Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, Wednesday Night Cornhole from 6 to 8, and live music every Friday and Saturday night. Like Sea Dog Brewing Company Bangor on Facebook for all their upcoming events. We'll see you at the Sea Dog. Sea Dog Brewing Company, Front Street, Bangor, your pre- and post-concert destination.
Fall's almost here. Winter can't be far away. Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street in Bangor, wants you to be ready for fall and winter. Bring your vehicle in right now and have it checked out before the cold weather comes. They'll check the battery, antifreeze, shocks, alignment, and much more. Don't wait. For once, be ready when the cold weather arrives. Make your appointment today. Call Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, or check them out on the web at BangorTire.com. Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, Bangor. More than just a tire store.
We are back on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning.
Feeling better now that we're through. Feeling better cause I'm over you. I learned my lesson.
went all the way to number one for Linda Ronstadt from her album Heart Like a Wheel. Linda, the subject of a terrific new documentary that opened nationwide on Friday called Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. We had a chance to talk with the directors, the award-winning filmmakers Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman. Love the movie so much. And Rob, I understand that this goes back to your favorite record of all time being the Stone Ponies' Different Drum.
Yes, good research. That was the first record I ever bought was Different Drum in 1968. I was a toddler. I was a precocious toddler.
But with exquisite musical taste, clearly.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that makes this film so powerful is the fact that it's narrated by Linda Ronstadt herself. And Jeffrey, I understand maybe we should credit the IT guy for an important connection here.
For important? Oh, yeah, that was Rob. Yeah, our computer repair guy was at Rob's house repairing his computer. And he saw the book on the desk, I think.
Yeah, I had the book, Linda's book, Simple Dreams, on my desk. And he said, oh, Linda Ronstadt's a client of mine. And he introduced us, and we wrote Linda a very impassioned letter. And she had seen one of our films and agreed to meet. And over lunch, we pitched her the idea of doing the film similar to how she did the book, which would be first person in her own voice, letting her tell her own story. And she was intrigued, but ultimately reluctant. She didn't think there would be any audience for the film, that there wouldn't be any funders for the film, and basically thought we were deluded to even want to do it. But we persisted, and she came around.
Obviously, you can't separate Linda's music from her family and the love she has of her family. And there's a great line early in the film when she says her father was like the music man.
Yeah, I think her grandfather maybe was like the music man. But yes, there was music in her home growing up. Everybody sang or played instruments. She heard all kinds of music, and all of those kinds of music were things that she came back to in the course of her career. You know, when she was at the height of her pop stardom, she decided that she wanted to sing operetta. And she, you know, learned how to do that and went to New York and starred in The Pirates of Penzance on Broadway. She was just never content to keep doing the same thing over and over again.
And then from there, she decided she was interested in standards, and approached Nelson Riddle, who had worked with Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald about doing these ballads. And that was hugely successful. And then she decided she wanted to really explore her Mexican roots, which led her to do the mariachi music.
And the Nelson Riddle albums really were a tribute to her mom, who was such a big fan.
Yeah, that music was in her house, thanks to her mom. And that was music that she also listened to throughout her pop career. You know, she listened to Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and all the greats. And she always wanted to sing that music, and she just decided she was going to do it. You know, the record companies never wanted her to do these outside-the-box adventures in singing, because they had a sure thing and they wanted to keep it going. And she just insisted, and she had enough clout so she was able to do it. And she was always successful. All of those adventures into all those different genres were hugely successful with audiences.
We're talking with Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman about their wonderful film, Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. J.D. Souther is such a big part of the film. They had an interesting and a lengthy professional and personal relationship, and the love clearly never went away. It was career and other things got in the way of those two, but certainly cared about each other and continued to.
Yeah, Linda is still close to many of her exes, including Governor Jerry Brown. But she's very beloved in the music world, and it was easy for us to get people to participate because they all had such respect for her and high regard.
I have to think that love and respect that people had also helped out, because I was thinking of the work it must have been to get clearances for all the music that you use. Did it help that everybody likes her so much?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was a challenge because her music was all written by different people. So the publishing rights were all over the place. But yeah, I mean, she's respected and revered, but also beloved just because she's really such a wonderful person. And she's maintained great relationships with the people that she's worked with over the years.
And one of those certainly is Emmylou Harris, and I thought it was a very powerful part of the film when she talked about how much Linda meant to her trying to put her life back together after the death of Gram Parsons.
Yeah.
Yeah, her relationships with her fellow female musicians were and are very important to her, as they were to the other women. I mean, they were all pioneers at that point, working in a business that was primarily run by men.
And Linda was the first female rock superstar. Bonnie Raitt compares her to Beyonce in the film. You know, she's really was a trailblazer.
And doing it, yeah, at a time when all the other rock stars were male. And all the guys in her band were men. How difficult was that? How much of a challenge was it for her to maintain a sense of self surrounded by men on the road?
Well, I think it was very challenging for her initially when she was very young. I mean, she had huge success when she was still in her 20s and had to cope with that. It's not what she set out to do. She didn't set out to be a pop star, but that's where she found herself. But at a certain point, she really decided that she was going to take control of the narrative of her career and started making her own choices about what she wanted to do and what kind of music she wanted to do. And I think that was that really just changed everything for her.
We had Peter Asher on our show a few months ago, and he told us first about the film and how wonderful it was going to be. So we've been looking forward to seeing it. But I thought it was very interesting that he said, you know, a lot of people look at the success they had together as producer and artist and assume that I was the brains behind the operation. But as he points out, most of those big decisions were made by Linda herself.
Yeah,
absolutely. And in fact, she's made a point of, when she was asked about the film in an interview, she said something to the extent of, you know, she didn't have anything to do with it, which could have been misinterpreted that she didn't want to have anything to do with it, which is not the case at all. But what she meant was that in her own production of her record, she was very hands-on and very involved on this. She was not that. So that's certainly how she approaches a project when it's her own project that she's going to call the shots.
Was the move away from pop and rock stardom as simple as growing tired of playing in front of those huge crowds and arenas and stadiums?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe to some extent it was preemptive in that she was, you know, at a certain point she might age out of it, although Mick Jagger never aged out of it. But I think more she just had this adventurous spirit and had to go with where her musical instincts took her. And she had this image that she wanted to perform on a stage, which had a proscenium and curtains, and she really had a connection with the audience, which she had lost when she was performing in the big rock arenas. I mean, she felt like she just really had lost any connection to the audience, that it was becoming rote. And that's what she really wanted to change, which led her to doing theater and operetta and ultimately standards and mariachi.
And as you mentioned, she never sought out the stardom, and she really does seem to be one of those rare megastars who did it for all the right reasons. Did it just because she loved making music?
She loved making music. She was not interested in celebrity. And that's really hard for, I think, for young people, particularly, to understand today, because everybody's obsessed with celebrity. And it's something that I don't really understand. I don't know why anybody would want to be famous. And I think that's one of the things I really appreciate about Linda. She just really had her core values remained intact. No matter how successful, and over the course of a career that had ups and downs, mostly ups, but she really stayed focused on the music, and that's what kept her going. Music and her personal connections to people.
Well, of course, underlying this story is the diagnosis of Parkinson's, the fact that it's taken away her singing voice, and she makes such a powerful statement in the film. She says, "I still sing in my mind." I can't imagine anybody handling the loss of that beautiful instrument with more grace than she has.
Yeah, we completely agree. But she doesn't see it that way. I mean, for her, it's just now a fact of her life, and she's made the adjustments accordingly. She's still extremely engaged in every other aspect of her life, despite her physical limitations. But I think, you know, what Jeffrey said about her basic temperament, that she's always just held on to her core humanity, and that's certainly serving her well in this latest challenge.
Well, and the final scene of the film is just, I tear up just thinking about it, a beautiful moment captured with her family. How did you get access to that, and how open was she to the camera being there?
It was very, very late in the editing process. We were literally 2 weeks away from finishing editing the film when she invited our crew to accompany her on a trip she was making to Mexico. You know, I think at that point in the process, she was comfortable enough with us. She trusted us. And she just decided to let us in. And I think, you know, it was a way of acknowledging who she is now and what her interests are now and what her limitations are. And it was a privilege to be able to do that.
Obviously, your film is going to reach the people who grew up loving Linda Ronstadt's music, as well as a new generation of people who might not be aware. What are your goals for this Linda Ronstadt documentary that's so wonderful?
You know, certainly we hope the film will introduce her to a new generation, an audience that may not have had the good fortune to experience her live in their lifetimes. But I think, you know, the basic human message is one of, for me, I'm inspired by her adventurous spirit and where that adventurous spirit led her in all these really incredible directions musically. And that's just a joy to experience.
Well, the film itself is a joy to experience. Wonderful concert footage of the interviews, the story. It's just a beautiful film. And I hope a whole lot of people see it. I've admired your work in the past. Celluloid Closet was terrific as well. The Sound of My Voice, Linda Ronstadt, new documentary. Rob, Jeffrey, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman talking about their great documentary, Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Monkey Mickey Dolenz pays tribute to the Beatles in an upcoming show at the Collins Center in Orono. We'll hear all about it next on Downtown.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue.
Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
What makes a community thrive? The people who live in it. When you use your First National Bank Visa debit card at participating local businesses, you save on everyday purchases while supporting the people who work day in and day out to make your town a vibrant, unique community. Receive cash back on purchases and support the local businesses that make our communities thrive. Bank local, buy local. Learn more at dreamfirstrewards.com. First National Bank, dream first because you can. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Central Street Farmhouse, downtown Bangor, for the best home brewing ingredients, equipment, and advice that you'll find anywhere. Plus, make your own wine right in the store. How does that work? Pick a wine kit, make an appointment, and whip up 6 gallons of the best wine you'll ever taste in less than 30 minutes. 2 months later, come back to bottle it and take it home. They offer these wine classes every day they're open, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call 992-4454 or see them on Facebook to find out more.
Before Dylan, before Cash, there was Guthrie. Penobscot Theater Company presents Woody Guthrie's American Song, Songs and Writings of America's Premier Folk Poet, Woody Guthrie. An exuberant musical celebration of our nation. Bring the whole family to Woody Guthrie's American Song, September 5th to the 29th at Bangor's Historic Opera House. Tickets at 942-3333 and penobscottheater.org.
Now is the time to change the way you heat and cool your home. Valley Home Services installs, services, and maintains Fujitsu heat pumps, the right choice for heating and cooling your home or business. Why Valley? Well, being family-owned for nearly four decades, we've learned that great customer service means treating our clients like family. That's why our staff goes above and beyond from the moment you contact us for your free consultation. Call us today and discover the Valley difference. Valley Home Services. Home is our middle name. Yes, indeed. The Monkees, Mickey Dolenz on the lead vocal there on a Carole King, Jerry Goffin tune, Pleasant Valley Sunday. Mickey Dolenz coming to Maine for what sounds like a heck of a show at the Collins Center on October 7th called It Was 50 Years Ago Today, a tribute to the Beatles' White Album. We had a chance to catch up with Mickey and hear about that and more. Mickey, good to have you with us. It's been a few years since we've talked to you, but we are so excited for this wonderful show you're bringing to town. It was 50 years ago today. A tribute to the Beatles' White Album. How did this all come together?
Well, you'd have to ask the producers that, actually. I can tell you how I got involved. Last year, in fact, it was like the end of last year, I got a call from my agent, and he said that there were these producers who I knew who they were. I'd worked with them before on other projects that were wanted to put together a 50-year anniversary tour celebrating the White Album. And I was like, that is incredible. I mean, I love the album. And then they mentioned, you know, the other possible players, musicians, principals, you know, like Todd and Christopher and Jason and Joey. And I was like, oh, geez, this sounds like it's very cool. You can certainly tell them I'm interested. And they went into negotiations, I guess, and the producers, you know, I get typically would, you know, start calling promoters and venues and saying, would this be the kind of show you'd be interested in with these players? And that's kind of how it happens, you know. You just, you get enough offers in and the routing works out, and all of a sudden you're, well, a year later or something, yeah, you're on the road, you know. And I'm excited about it. I've done compilation tours before, and I like them. They're fun because you get to sing stuff that you normally wouldn't sing, that I wouldn't sing in a normal Monkey show or a Mickey Dolan show. I get to sing, you know, stuff that, and I was and still am, of course, a huge, huge Beatle fan.
And, of course, on the White Album, being a double album, there's a lot of music and a lot of different styles to choose from. There's really something for everybody there.
Oh, boy. I'll say it's going to be a long show. You know, we've all sort of picked the songs that we want to do off the White Album, and the majority of the show will be the songs from the White Album. But we'll also, each of us, do a couple of songs of our solo stuff. You know, I'll do something like "I'm a Believer" and "Pleasant Valley Sunday" or whatever, and Toddle, I'm sure, will do "Hello." You know, and so the audience will get a pretty well-rounded show. I mean, you know, amazing amount of material, you know, geez.
And of course, when you guys were going strong in the Monkees, you got to know the Beatles, you became friends with them, and they got it. They understood what you guys were trying to do.
Oh, absolutely they did. Well, a lot of other people did, too. You know, Frank Zappa, for instance, was a big fan. He was on the show and in the movie. He got it. And yes, you're right, the Beatles did get it. It was John Lennon, in fact, that was the first one to say that the Monkees are like the Marx Brothers. And he was absolutely right. I mean, the Monkees was much more like the Marx Brothers than it was the Beatles. You know, a very different kettle of fish. Because the Monkees was a television show initially about this imaginary band. You know, there was no such thing as the Monkees. It was this TV show about this band that wanted to be the Beatles. And on the show, if you've ever watched it, we never made it. We were never famous. We never actually made it on the television show, which was interesting and a smart, I think, a very smart move by the producers, because it was the struggle for success that endeared it to so many people, kids around the country and the world. You know, that struggle for success is what, because there was all these kids out there in their garages and living rooms and basements, you know, practicing and playing garage bands, and that's basically what the Monkees were. They were a garage band.
If I ever watched the show, brother,
I made it.
I had the lunchbox, brother. I was watching. I was there.
Well, there you go.
Now, people,
and, you know, now since then, there's been other examples. Glee is an example.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, where it's a show about a Glee club, an imaginary Glee club, but all the actors on that show could sing, and they could dance, and they could act, and they could do and play. They could do it all. They went on the road, if I'm not mistaken, actually, and did concerts. And then, but in 1966, you know, 67, I mean, nothing like that had ever happened. And so, yeah, there was a lot of the people I cared about got it. But there were people that didn't get it. And a lot of people probably to this day don't get it. But like I said, the people that I cared about got it. And you know, and frankly, you know, when you're that successful, you don't really give a crap.
Yeah. Now, one of the other people who got it, and we've talked with you about him before, because he may be my favorite songwriter of all time, your friend Harry Nilsson, and it's been so great the last few years to see people continue to embrace and appreciate his music.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, he got it big time. I mean, he had his first hit as a writer with us, with the Monkees. He was working at a bank and writing songs and trying to sell his songs around the city. And I remember clearly when he came in the studio, we were doing Headquarters, and he came in and was introduced as this aspiring songwriter. And he played a song called Cuddly Toy for Davey. And Davey said, yeah, I'll do that. That's good. I like that one. And years later, Harry and I became incredibly close, very, very close, our families and he and I. And he told me years later, he said he walked out of the studio with the publisher, the guy that had brought him in. And the publisher said to him, you can quit the bank.
We're talking with Mickey Dolenz here on Downtown. People may not know this about you because you were a drummer on the show, but the guitar was your first instrument. And is it true that most of the songs you've written are maybe a little more country flavored?
Well, my mom was from Texas, and so I was influenced by, what she would listen to when I was growing up, the Sons of the Pioneers or Tennessee Ernie Ford or stuff. Everly Brothers, I was a huge Everly Brothers fan. So I guess, I started out playing actually classical guitar, Spanish guitar, Segovia stuff. And, I studied and I took lessons and practiced, but I was 12 years old, 14 years old. And I was okay for a 12-year-old. But then I sort of morphed into folk music from that era, because it was the late 50s, early 60s. Mm. So I started doing Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary and singing and started writing little songs. And yeah, but you're right. I mean, the guitar was and still is sort of my instrument of choice. my audition piece, for instance, was Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry, my audition piece for the Monkees on guitar. And then they cast me and they said, you're going to be the drummer. And I said, great, fine. Where do I start? And they immediately put me into a class with a teacher, and I had quite a while. And I could read music. I wasn't starting from scratch. I'd been in bands and cover bands and sat down and played around on the drums. And also I only had to learn what I had to learn. It was only right. Songs that I needed to learn for our concerts, which were the Monkee songs. It's not like I certainly do not consider myself any kind of a studio cat. There's no way I could go into a recording session and sit down and in front of some sheet music and play some song I'd never, ever heard before. I'm not a studio musician, but I learned to play what I had to know and what I had to play. And I was fine, but I did a similar thing when I was a kid. I had a series called Circus Boy on NBC in the 50s, and they said, you're going to learn to ride an elephant. And I said, fine, where do I start?
I saw a comment a few months ago you were making, and you said that you and Michael Nesmith did your mourning for your former bandmate and friend, of course, Peter Tork, who passed away, that you did your mourning in many ways when he was unable to come out and tour with you and Mike.
Yeah, well, with Peter, it was a long time coming. The short story is he had made an announcement a number of years ago now, that he was having an issue, health issues, and he didn't talk about it much after that. But I knew, and Nez knew that he was fighting it, you know, and he did. He fought it for years, and so that was not a huge surprise. I mean, it was, you know, sort of, you know, we just knew that that was what was eventually going to happen. You know, they were managing it, as they say. but it was still, you know, it still affects you, you know, even though you know it's coming. It still affects you if, you know, for no other reason, you start thinking about your own mortality. With Davey, of course, it was a huge surprise.
Right.
I mean, it was just right out of the blue. He appeared to be very healthy and happy, and that was a shocker. I mean, that just, because he'd actually had a physical, you know, a couple of months before, and, you know, because we were going to go on tour, so that was a big shocker.
Can you talk a little bit, Mickey, away from music, about the work you do with Dolan's and Daughters Fine Furniture?
Oh, well, I've always been a workshop tool kind of guy. My father was, friends, and my ironically, I've been married three times, and all the fathers of my wives, my two ex-wives and now my current wife, have all been into building and tools and workshops and stuff, which I don't think is coincidental. But so I've always had a shop. Even in the 60s, during the Monkees, I had a full-blown workshop in my basement, and it was my, you know, sort of way of, relaxing and doing something else. And I've always been, you know, before the Monkees, the casting, before the auditions that year, 65, I was in college studying to be an architect.
Right.
And so I've always had that interest, that penchant for that, you know, that kind of thing. So the short story is, a couple of years ago, I was building something with one of my daughters who also loves building things and working with tools. And she's the one that said, you know, we should start a Dolan's and Daughters Fine Furniture. And I was like, that is very cool. And, you know, it's fun. You know, I do it now with my daughter, and also my sister now has also gotten involved, another Dolan's daughter. But of course, you know, every once in a while, like right now, we have to shut it down and post on the website that, you know, we can't take any more orders because Daddy's going on tour.
Mickey, thank you so much. Really looking forward to the show. And as always, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye now.
Mickey Dolan's with us here on Downtown. And boy, that sounds like a heck of a show. What a lineup. Mickey, Christopher Cross, Todd Rundgren, Joey Molland from Badfinger, Jason Scheff of Chicago doing songs from the Beatles White Album, and then a few of their own songs as well.
It's a show I'm really looking forward to checking out. I'm making my plans to go up and see it. And yeah, that band is just an incredible lineup.
And Mickey, I think a little allergy or something going there in our conversation, but if you caught any of the clips of him touring recently with Mike Nesmith, he's still in great voice and a good guy. Great to have Mickey back on the show with us. Our thanks to him, Anson Williams, Rob Epstein, and Jeffrey Friedman, the directors of that wonderful Linda Ronstadt documentary, for joining us as well. And thanks to you for being here. Join us tomorrow on the program. Nick Charlton, Maine Black Bear football coach, Mike Lowe of the Portland Press Herald, Alan Adams of the Maine Edge with movie reviews and more. Hope the rest of your Sunday goes well. We'll see you next time right here on Downtown. You're gonna